Welcome to the Social Ideas Podcast, brought to you by the Cambridge Centre for Social Innovation. This series looks through the lens of those striving for a better world. I'm Pam Mungrew. Will Britton is a social entrepreneur and a winner of the 2019 Cambridge Social Innovation Prize. As a social entrepreneur, Will created the Autonomy app, which helps people learn new skills through step-by-step videos, helping them to self-evaluate their needs. I asked Will how he started on this journey of combining education technology with one-to-one support for vulnerable people in social care settings.
Yeah, good question. So I actually, my background many moons ago was in video production. But yeah, no, so I came out of that. I then went into the video production industry. I was kind of working project to project, really. And I did that for about a year. And in between the projects, I'd go down to the local recruitment firm and say, I'll do anything, basically, like any temp jobs you've got, I'll do them. And one of the temp jobs I was doing meant to be 2 weeks, then it became 4 weeks. And, you know, I was doing video production and stuff, but it took more of my time. And essentially about, I don't know, maybe 6 months, a year into this like temp job. So I absolutely hate this job. It's just, how have I got into this situation where this job that I hate is just taking, because they keep offering me hours and stuff. And I need the money. And it was just kind of the perpetual cycle of difficulty. But I still needed a job. And like at the time, my dad was teaching young adults with learning disabilities and challenging behavior at a local college. And he said that, look, they're always looking for support workers. Like I could put your name in the hat and they might call you up and say, we've got some support work, but it's nothing like you've ever done before. I was like, okay, yeah, put my name in the hat. That's fine. So I went in, they gave me someone to shadow. And she was saying, like, you know, I want you to follow this person around for 2 weeks and get an idea of the role. Like, I remember going in and it was just kind of this such a unique environment. And they were short staffed, classic education. So they were really short staffed. And then within the first day, I was on my own. And it was like, actually, you can't, you know. And it was quite female heavy. So you had vulnerable students that were males and some of them needed to get a toilet and stuff. So you had to, and residentials, you have to have a certain amount of male staff, a certain amount. So there wasn't many males. So I ended up doing things that required a bit more of a gender split. So yeah, really quickly, I was kind of thrown into the whole thing around supporting people. Primarily, like all of our students had some kind of barrier to education, special needs, quite severe all the way to quite moderate. But I absolutely loved it. I thought it was brilliant. I really enjoyed that. I was still doing a lot of video production and stuff on the side and applying for stuff. And I started to kind of wind down a lot of the video production stuff I was doing. And I started to just pick up more support work. I then was doing, by the, you know, within kind of 6 months, I was full-time support worker. And I remember at the time the iPad had just come out. It was kind of a really interesting time because it was basically, this thing's going to change education. It's going to be really interesting. And, you know, smart technology and tablets are going to really revolutionize everything. But no one knew what good looked like. Right? There wasn't like, well, this is good practice and let's all do this and this is what works. It was like, this thing could be amazing and it's got so many opportunities, but we don't really know what to do with it. So there was lots of like networking events and I remember my manager gave me like 800 quid and I remember he just came in the office. He was like, I've been given like 800 quid to buy some technology for our students, but I don't know anything about technology. Will, you like technology? Do you want to spend the 800 quid? So I bought like a couple of iPod touches. And then because all I knew was video production, I bought loads of flip cameras. Because basically I could make a video, play it on the iPod touch and some other places. And then I found like an old iMac in the corner of this room that had been used from a previous student, but they'd left and no one knew how to use an Apple computer. So they'd just put a cover over it. I took that basically. And then I basically just started filming all my students doing stuff. And at the time I then went on to study my PGCE. So I specialized in special education. I started picking up teaching hours. So I was there for 5-6 years. By the end of it, I was teaching like 80 plus students, IT, media, graphics, through various entry level qualifications. I was also kind of tutoring people, and I was also like as a split role, so as well as an assistive technology specialist. So it was my job to find technology on the market that overcame the barriers to education that my students had. I think essentially, during that period, I was using a lot of video production. I started to realize that video was the preferred method of communication for the students that I was working with. So for example, units of, like, it was at the time, it's at ASDAN, so the students were required to demonstrate that they could do something. We had to take a picture of them. at the bottom of the picture, they'd write a big paragraph of writing about what they were doing in the pitch and the skills they'd learned. But a lot of them really struggled with like writing, numeracy, literacy. It just, the whole process just highlighted their disability. And actually what I started to do was record them. I'd record them, you know, washing up or cooking a meal or then reflecting on the curriculum. And I'd start making them to DVDs on this laptop, on this desktop I'd stolen. So, and then I was like sending off this DVD with all the students and all the chapters about the things that they've done. And it was really interesting actually. So I sent off the DVD to the boarding body. And they sent a letter back saying, we don't have a DVD player, but we'll pass them anyway. So that shows you how like behind the times education was. But for me, what I observed is the people that I was supporting, they much preferred video. They preferred it to communicate to other people and they preferred it as a method to learn from. And it didn't highlight a disability. And what they actually really wanted was professional video content, but in a way that communicates on their level. So what they really didn't want is cooking by Jamie Oliver, you know, because it's about Jamie Oliver. It's about him in the market and slapping this and throwing that. Actually, what they wanted was really good quality, robust content, but for this particular challenge they have. You know, these young adults are 22, 23. Some of them might have the literacy and numeracy levels of maybe like a 9, 10-year-old, but they don't want baby sounds on their apps. You know, they're adults. You know, they're in relationships and stuff like that. So they wanted something that worked for them. There was a training day, staff training day about QR codes, these kind of square barcodes. And I'd always seen them around and I knew how to scan them, but I never knew how to create one. And on this training day, teacher training day, they taught us how to create this barcode. And I remember thinking, God, that's so cool. I can just make a barcode. I can link it to a video that I've made for my student and I can stick it on an item. So like effectively they could scan the Hoover with their smart device and it would show them how to Hoover their house. So I don't have to teach them the same thing over and over again. And they have access to that video. And that's kind of the concept of autonomy, the initial concept. How can people just walk around and scan things, you know, with their smart device and it shows them how to use it, but in a way that's accessible for this kind of cohort of people. So that was kind of my concept idea. And then someone else kind of come in externally and was like, that's such a good idea, you should sell that. So that's kind of, yeah, I guess the main starting point.
I mean, that's quite a journey that you've been on. Why did you choose the sort of social entrepreneurship, social enterprise route?
Yeah, I guess, there's so many reasons. Probably one of the reasons is it's certainly like my first business. So, you know, I don't really, that was the bit I starting the company. What I did was I knew how to create a good product for this cohort of people and the plan for the product, but I didn't know how to make it into a viable business at the time. So I didn't know anything about a market size or you know, is it big? Is it small? Like, so when I was assistive technology specialist, it was really common for small charities to have small pots of cash and then to make an app or something. And because I had, you know, these iPads that I'd sourced for the students and some iPod touches, and I went to a lot of these events, I was like, oh, that's a really good app that you've made. I'll put it on my students and it will help them. But then what I observed was maybe a year later, the charity runs out the funding pot or it doesn't exist anymore. So that app then gets shelved, no one supports it. And what I observed is like, what you end up getting is a vulnerable person. They start using this app and relying on that. And then they don't understand that commercially it doesn't exist anymore, or the charity's run out of funding. It's like, well, what does that mean? Like, why is my app not working? So actually a huge premise of the company was I wanted to create something that was self-sustaining. So it didn't rely on other sources of income. I remember like some people approached me in the early days, like, hey, if you move this from a limited company to a charity, I can get you all this kind of charitable money. And I just remember that not being what I wanted and not being something that was attractive to me, because I wanted it to be self-sustaining in the idea that it's good enough that people buy into it and it sustains itself. It's not like the Will Show. It's a genuine company that provides this solution. So that's kind of the ethos of trying to, the underpins why it needs to be a commercial company that self-sustains and it stays around so that vulnerable people can rely on it, I think is the main point.
So how long have you been going now?
The company was registered in 2015 as a limited company. I didn't raise any investment until 2017. And actually that was the point at when we started to kind of build. Back at the start, I was still part-time teaching. So I was fortunate enough to get some kind of private investment from some individuals not far from where I'm located. And they enabled me to kind of, I didn't have a scalable model at the time. That was one of my problems. In the early days, I was making the videos, and then I was also printing all the QR codes off my home printer. And then I'd go around and stick them around the houses of the people that we'd provide the service to. And I remember, like, oh, I was on this, I was in, there was this social care boost program. We were on that program. I say we, it was just me at the time. And we got to the final. In fact, I won the section, but I remember the final, the panel, they were like, what happens if someone goes, this is such a good idea, I want 1,000 people to use it by the summer. And it was like in a month's time. And my first, in my head, I was like, God, that's a lot of paper. That's a lot of paper. I guess I'd print so much paper at home. And from that bit, it was like, what you've got isn't scalable. You know, you need to create something that's like, that is the tech scalable. So a big part of the early stage of investment was rebuilding the tech platform, because I don't know, will no longer relies on printing anymore. And it helps our net zero targets as well.
So then how did you make the company more scalable and save yourself paper?
Basically, what would happen is previously I'd basically create the QR code, and then behind the scenes that would bounce around using some clever Google Analytics stuff, and it enabled me to track that this person's using this QR code in their kitchen to scan the video of how to, you know, make a cup of coffee. That enabled me to provide the data back to the client. But to do that, I had to print every QR code. What we were able to do is create a system where the QR code's quite generic, and actually they log in through the application on their mobile device, and that application follows their profile. So we're able to just provide one QR code or however many they need, and we don't need thousands. And we can also send them to a printing company and get them in bulk. It doesn't have to be my own printer. Yeah, so that was part of the early stages, is and that's always been the design, is like every time it's like, what if I'm doing this, is it scalable? What does it look like at scale? That's always been a lot of the considerations around like how I'm building everything in the company.
So is it still just Will on his own, or do you have a workforce now?
No, we've got it's about 12 full-time staff. We've got really good team of people, actually. Some people I've known from the industry, through meeting people from the industry through the years. And yeah, others that we've been able to recruit into the company. No, it's really good. I mean, like, learning disability and neurodiversity is it's a complex space, and I'd be naive to say like I know everyone in this space and services, like, so it's really key that we just try and hire the best people that know the best knowledge, and everyone's really good in their space. And like, my background's in education, but we've got people from a social care background, we've got people from mental health services, people from employment spaces, and it's great because like we've got people that, you know, have sons or daughters with disabilities, and it's great because everyone can share their experience. And like, if you're supporting someone and you don't know the answer, you're able to turn to your colleague and go, hey, I've got this person in supported living, and you've got experience in supported living. Is this how it works? This is what I'm hearing. So it's just a really good place to share good practice. And I think that is another one of the kind of founding principles, is what I observed is, I was very, so when I was teaching, obviously I was quite a newly qualified teacher into the space, and I had some really good expert, significantly, but people that have been there a long time, and they were a lot older than me, but they had so much wisdom around the changes in education and the challenges. And I just thought, as a mix, those kind of young people come into the profession that are kind of young and excited, and those older people that are experienced and have seen different trends and stuff move. And I think that as a team, that's like a really good way to get really good practice. Because you might have someone like me that looks at it with a different perspective, you know, because I've got this like video production perspective, but it has to be through the lens of someone that, you know, understands the challenges they face, and how do I look at, and also to be challenged on, oh, that won't work because of this. It doesn't mean they're right or wrong, but it to have that, you don't want an echo chamber, I think, is the main thing. You don't want someone that's going, oh, it's such a great idea, or whatever. You want someone to be able to say, oh, I think I think it would be good if you did this or not. It's a, yeah, and back in back when I was teaching the provision that we were part of, we got an Ofsted outstanding for that provision. So it was good to be around those kind of people and those systems that I certainly learned some all of the foundations of the way I think and what I want to do, certainly in my during my time of teaching with some really other good people in the team. Yeah.
So, Will, you were one of the winners of the 2019 cohort of the Cambridge Social Innovation Prize. In fact, you're one of the first winners within the prize. Can you remember why you decided to apply for it?
Yeah, I remember I liked the fact that it supported the individual, targeted the individual. And what I found was the education establishment that I was working in was like Ofsted outstanding, special educational needs. If I wanted to have a room of people to listen to what I was saying, that was easier through the prism of that organization than leaving that organization and then trying to be able to communicate this to another room of people. So what I wanted to achieve was to essentially use some of the proceeds of the prize to get the opportunity to kind of stand on a small podium and tell people at networking events and other stuff like this is how I see the future of this space, and I think this is why it's amazing, and this is what can change, and this is what I think. So it gave me the ability to do that. So it's certainly an enabling fund, and then also some of the expert, the networking connections and the support around it. It was kind of really early on in the journey as well. So there was definitely that benefit.
One of the interesting aspects of the prize is that you win £10,000. That is about essentially it's for you to use for your own professional development, however you choose to use it. Now you don't have to go into detail, but I'm a bit nosy and I'd love to know how you use that money and how did it actually help you as a founder of a social enterprise that wanted to scale up.
Yeah, I mean, so basically what we used it for was a couple of like network, so a couple of shows and events where you pay a bit extra and they give you like a slot to stand on a stage and do a talk. So what I was doing, generally my budget was like next to zero without the fund. So it was like I can either at best afford like a tiny little stand, like a startup stand over in a corner. But actually it enabled me to kind of negotiate a bit with the event organizers and say, well, if I get like a small stand, can you give me a speaking slot? So I got the ability to do that a couple of times through that fund, through some of the bigger events in the space. And that enabled me to connect with some governments and talk to some people. And it was great because we definitely got some business, some commercial business on the back of that. So, and that was the aim really. Getting, pitching the idea, explaining how it works, explaining the impact, explaining the kind of vision. And then ideally then that would drive a commercial sale because then we can use the capital to reinvest in the company and grow the service and grow the product. So that was the major hypothesis, and I guess we achieved that in hindsight, definitely. Yeah.
So, like I said, you won in 2019. It's 2023. How has autonomy progressed in the last 4 years?
Yeah, 2019. I think I might have had maybe three members of staff then, four maximum. Yeah, so we have like 12 or so now. We've at the time only had the independent living program, and that was just getting off its feet with local governments. We probably only had a handful of clients. We probably got well, it's well over, it's probably about 15, 20 local authorities that commission us to provide support to people. We got near and about 500 people that we provide support to currently. We've supported over, I think it's almost 2,000 people since the inception now. Yeah, well, so we've got another program now. So we've got a program around people's employment. So that was this is the first financial year that's been on the market, and that's growing even quicker than our previous program, which is really nice. So we've been able to provide support both kind of in the home and around independent living skills, and now in people's work and opportunities. So not only is the program able to kind of meet the targets of, like, can it generate itself? Can it be that ethos of the company? Is it self-sustaining? Can we get people on it and stuff? Does it work commercially? But then also, like, the impact's brilliant. People like getting jobs, people like being able to just, complete skills that they people they've never had or they didn't think they could do. I mean, employment's great because it's, people getting a job is such a when they never thought they could, get a job and they didn't think they could work in that sector. We've got so many good, like, case studies of that. So it's brilliant. So that kind of, like, a big thing we're trying to achieve is just kind of scale that up across the country. Yeah, so quite a lot, I guess. I guess as well, being able to it helps around fundraising. We've been pretty fortunate to raise maybe about 1.1 million quid over a couple of rounds now of investment. The majority of that is private investment, and also some social impact funding from a couple of other organizations that have been able to, yeah, really help kind of along the journey as well and connect us with certain spaces.
The Cambridge Social Innovation Prize 2024 is launching, and we're looking for applications. Why would you suggest that people apply?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the freedom around how you want to spend the money is really good. Sometimes money spending can come with pretty robust do's and don'ts. So having the freedom to be able to, obviously you're saying to the person you're working with or the fund, this is how I want to spend it and these are the impact. But it's that freedom around what you want to do with it and how you think it would impact you is great. It's the support to the individual. I think that was it was much more individual focused, which was nice. So it enables the so like in regards to myself, it was the I looked at, like, regardless of the fund, I'm kind of standing back going, this is one of the areas of that I really want to be able to do in the business. I want to be able to try and get I can't get in. It's door opening, isn't it? It's like I can't get into this door because I actually require a bit of capital to get in. And I don't have that capital. So how do I get into this door? And it was a great fit for that. It was like, well, you have the freedom to put the case to say, I think if I can get into this door, these people will listen. And it worked out in the end. Yeah, and taking the risk and also someone to navigate you through the door, someone to kind of work with you and make connections. Some of the events are really good that I've been to, become part of the alumni pool and stuff like that. Opportunities like this. Yeah, it's good. I mean, I definitely encourage people.
As we wrap this up, what is your hope for autonomy in the future?
Yeah, great question. So I guess stepping even further back is video being the most kind of powerful way to learn and retain skills and develop independence. So it doesn't have to be about independence in the home or independence in employment. There's so many more branches where people learn. It's why can't someone go when they're going to hospital? Get video on their smart device to explain to them, this is what an MRI scan looks like. But, like, I'm talking about the cohort of people that we provide support to. That's where our kind of USP is, that providing high quality content to that cohort of people that in a method they understand, is broken down, it's professional. That's the bit we specialize in. And we know from being in the industry and the challenges people have is, if you're someone with, on the autism spectrum and you're anxious about an MRI scan, they'll give you a leaflet about, like, this is what a scan is. And it's bereft of good quality information that is communicated in a way that they understand. And what they might really want to do is be able to watch someone, a video to explain what it's going to be like so they can visualize themselves in it. It would need to highlight other stuff that they probably don't in a leaflet, such as the noises you'll hear. The safety procedures, like just things that are more specific to that cohort of people. I guess the main point is, like, we don't plan on just stopping at people's independence in the home and independence in employment. They're the two programs we've got today.
That was Will Britton, creator of the Autonomy app and winner of the Cambridge Social Innovation Prize. You can find out more about the prize by following us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube.